Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 47th installment of the Godfathers Podcast. And in case you didn't know, we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. This week's episode and all of our archives are available on any of your favorite podcast providers, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and many, many more. However, I'm a firm believer that if you truly want to enjoy this show and the nuances of this program, you need to check out the video version available exclusively on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. This week's episode is brought to you by Kangol Hats, Camelback, Coffee Friend, Eyeglasses.com, Airvape, Fight TV, Natalie Attire, Just CBD, and NordVPN. Visit our website for information on all of these great merchants. My name is Donnie De Silva, and I have the distinct honor of introducing to all of you the Superman and Batman to my meddling Zack Snyder. Here are Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell and your bro Danny O.
I think it's obvious the way that he pointed that out that you were Superman I was Batman on this one.
I noticed that. I'll take that because I've always wondered, like, why does anyone have an opinion other than Superman is the greatest of all superheroes? Am I alone in this? Who can beat Superman?
Batman beats Superman. Didn't you watch Batman v Superman?
Yeah, you needed kryptonite. Take kryptonite out of the situation. You don't get to take
shit out of the situation. That's like saying I could beat you, but take bullets out of the equation. Like,
here's the thing.
Hurt Superman.
But here's the thing you got to remember, right?
Hurt you.
No matter how much Superman and how cool Superman might have been in the entire equation of all of that, at one point, he still turned into a gigantic piece of shit, right? Did he not, right?
How so?
Well, he just turned into a bad guy who took it out on everybody else, right?
He had anger issues.
Right? He did. Batman never stopped being rich. Suck it.
Wow.
It's a good point.
Feel you.
Batman's superpower is he's got more money than you.
Yeah,
he's a good Superman trader. Well, bro, I could just fly around the world and rewind time and go back to another time where I could take all your motherfucking money.
That was only convenient Christopher Reeve Superman. they haven't re-hit that in a minute.
Big shout to him though. Rest in peace.
I will say that speaking of Zack Snyder and Justice League, that new movie dropped today on HBO Max. And I did before tonight's episode turn on the first act, which means I have an astonishing 3 hours and 40 minutes to go.
Jeez.
it's like watching a New Japan broadcast, like that New Year's Eve, one of those crazy Japanese, you know what I mean, fighting things like that start at like midnight, but you can still wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and it's halfway through. Or maybe it was cricket.
Since you watched the first act, does it intrigue you to watch the rest? Has it changed in any way that's different from the first?
Well, that's the thing. The one thing that really stands out to me after watching the first act so far is I don't remember shit from Justice League when it came out years ago. Okay. So I'm sitting there going, is that different?
Yeah.
What did they do there? Is that different? I don't know.
But if you can't tell, it's interesting because you called the first one dog shit. So how is this first act then to you?
So far, it's still dog shit.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything that was really redeeming so far in the first 30 minutes or whatever fuck it's been. But,
I could put myself through 4 hours of that.
Well, here's the thing. Like, it's going to be one of those, like, is his stuff sprinkled in or is it added at the end?
Like, Apparently, it's throughout. And it's the whole reimagining.
We'll all know by tomorrow,
right?
Because it's going to be out there on the internet, and somebody's going to be like, "Okay, this is what happened."
Yeah,
some nerd's going to do a side by side comparison on every shot that changed or was enhanced or was added to, and I'm going to need that guide.
Can I honestly make a public service announcement to all you motherfuckers who post YouTube videos that say stuff like the full Justice League, and then you go there thinking you're going to see some clips, and all you see is a dude talking the whole time about what he thinks about the movie. Like,
You got Rickrolled, bro.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you got fucking clickbaited, man.
So many times, I'm like, come on, bro. I hate those things, man.
You got clickbaited. Don't worry. You just got taken by a good social influencer.
Yeah. I don't do that anymore. I just wait for someone I know to go, yeah, it's worth watching or not, which usually is my brother. He's my Roger and Ebert.
Really, though, if you think about it, like getting clickbaited, isn't that like in Rickrolled, isn't that like the lesser of like getting catfished, though?
So you're
okay, Dan.
Yeah, I feel you.
If you fall for one, you might fall for the other. I'm just saying.
Yeah, done with those rabbit holes. I'll wait for you guys to tell me if it's worth watching, and then I'll ignore you.
Before we switch gears into more important shit, I will say that since we opened talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League, on the flip side of the nerdverse from DC Comics and the DC Cinematic Universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe 2 weeks ago wrapped up their Disney Plus TV show WandaVision with a killer series finale. That show blew me away in terms of character development, in terms of setting up the entire next phase of the movies. Mm-hmm. They created characters. Monica Rambeau, that woman, the woman who plays Monica Rambeau, she is going to be a hero to little black girls for the next 25 years, man. Like, she was the Captain Marvel character in the comics back in the 80s, and now she's totally reimagined as this newer version of herself. It's so badass, and I'm loving everything that they did with it. The whole show went really well. And now tomorrow, as of right now when we're recording, so we're recording this on Thursday, March 18th, Friday, Falcon and the Winter Soldier drops on Disney Plus. And I have a friend of mine that's already seen an advanced copy of it. And he said, so where WandaVision was all about supernatural and all these crazy magical circumstances, Falcon and Winter Soldier is gritty and real. And it reminds you of how the MCU first started, where it was like, it's real people. And the way it's portrayed, it's like, these superheroes could actually exist because no one has magic. It's just tech and human characteristics that we appreciate, like courage and bravery and guile and strategy. And then there's all of the faults that happen within them. Cause like, if you've watched the Marvel movies, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, they have like a love hate thing going. And now there's this whole interesting piece because at the end of the Endgame movie, Captain America handed the shield over to Falcon, making him the new Captain America.
Yeah.
And so this is a really interesting time. And a friend of mine, he said to me this morning, he goes, man, between Monica Rambeau, the Black Captain America, and everything else, Black people are taking over Marvel.
Well, my hope actually is that, you know, in addition or to what you said, that these aren't going to be characters that are just inspiring to Black kids, but to all kids. You know what I'm saying?
No, but because representation matters. Representation,
of course, representation matters.
Right, it now matters. It does, yeah.
Absolutely it does. But my point is that, you know, it's not, they're not Black heroes for the Black community. They're for the entire world. Like when 100%. Black Panther is loved and adored by all people of all races, you know, to me that signifies the power of MCU and putting, you know, stock behind these characters of color. So I'm glad obviously they're doing it, and I'm hoping that's the way in which they're positioned as superheroes, not just for the Black community, as some people would assume.
A man I've known since kindergarten that's a member of your crew goes by the name Spider-Man because he always loved Spider-Man, right?
Apparently he was called that as a child too. So right. I think it was bestowed upon him.
But I think in part because of how much he loved the character.
Yeah, and I think
he's the darker Peter Parker, baby.
He's exactly that. And that speaks to what I'm saying, is that like Black people have always revered superheroes regardless of their color. You know what I mean? So I'm just looking for, and I see it, which is great. Like I see that people, especially the young generation, man, they're accepting their heroes regardless of, you know, their skin. And that's hugely, hugely important in today's society, as you guys obviously know, especially given everything that's going on today, everything that's been going on for the past several years, you know. And with that, and you guys know this already, I think it's super important that we acknowledge something that, you know, we haven't really touched upon on the show. And I take blame for that as well. And that's a lot of the anti-Asian hatred and violence towards the Asian community that's really had a significant uptick since the beginning of the pandemic. We're all aware that the coronavirus has, you know, apparently, was initiated in China. And I think a lot of the rhetoric from the former administration in the States has caused a lot of hate towards the Asian community. So, you know, obviously, you know, one of the biggest benefits about being where we're from, you know, here in Toronto is how multicultural it is. And so I've been reaching out to a lot of my Asian friends and they're feeling it right now, especially in light of the fact that there was that shooter in Atlanta this week who shot eight people who were killed, six of them Asian. And, you know, it's just horrifying to know that, you know, there continues to be this senseless murder and hate towards minorities. And obviously, this is something that we need to continue to combat. But I just want to express my disgust and my pain and my support for the Asian community, because, you know, it doesn't matter who what race it is. Any form of hatred is definitely wrong. And this is a very sad story.
This is not something that is new as well. This is something that goes back as old as time, along with racism towards the Black community, racism towards the Indigenous community, racism towards the Irish community. There has been racism through history. If you think about it, all the way back when they were building railroads across the United States of America, right? And it's always been, and there's been racist terms for humans all throughout history and stuff like that. I think the thing possibly might be that there's not a lot of steam behind the Asian community when it comes to us, because typically growing up in life, they were always told by their parents, just keep your head down, just mind your business. It'll be better this way. Like they're as a community, they're very like, we just mind our business. We just go about things. They don't, you know what I mean? They don't want to quote, start a ruckus, or you know what I mean? They've always been that way, but quite frankly, enough is absolutely enough, and they deserve to be treated like everybody else. A human. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. Nothing stops in the rainbow of humanity, plain and simple, right?
Sure.
So I believe that this is something that goes far beyond the practices and the incidents that have happened in the recent light.
I believe
that it's just something that the unfortunate reality is that what has happened in the recent light has brought all of this to the forefront.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Let me jump in by saying this. First and foremost, anyone that listens to this show and anyone that knows me knows that I don't tolerate any sort of racism of any sort on any level at all. I was extremely vocal last summer with the George Floyd incident, with the Breonna Taylor situation and everything else. That all being said, the recent rash of violence against the Asian community, specifically what's been happening in the San Francisco Bay Area over the last 2 months, it seems to be young men, for the most part, 18, 19, 20 year olds of various races, white, Black, some Asian, attacking elderly Asian men and women. So when that's the situation, what comes to my mind is you have young assholes preying on people they think are feeble to get away with a quick score, with a quick mug. Okay. There was a story that came out this week about a woman in San Francisco, Zhao Zheng Ji, a woman, I think she's 80 years old, and some guy tried to mug her and she fought back and he had to go to hospital with a bunch of injuries. Like,
good.
Fuck, man, don't mess with that girl.
Yeah, man.
But there's also been situations like the man back in February who was attacked by three 19-year-olds at a laundromat and lost several hundred dollars. And that's what they mugged him for, was several hundred dollars. So I just want to be, and this whole situation that just happened in Georgia this week, shockingly sad. But I will say that my first reaction to the story that happened in Georgia And people could say, yeah, because you're white, asshole. And that's fine. You're entitled to think that. But my first reaction is this is a crime against sex workers and a crime against women. Before I reacted to this is a crime against Asians, just like I think what's happened over the last 2 months in the San Francisco Bay Area is a crime against the elderly taking advantage of people that appear to be easy targets, more so than a crime against Asians. Now, all that being said, going back to my original point when we were fucking around talking about Marvel, representation matters. And with a lack of vocal, powerful Asian Americans and Asian Canadians in leadership positions, it is harder to rally the troops. It is harder to rally communities. And so it is incumbent upon humanity, not just of one or two different racial groups. It is incumbent upon humanity to band together and say, we will not tolerate attacks on the feeble. We will not tolerate attacks on the elderly. We will not tolerate attacks on any particular minority group. We will not tolerate attacks on white people. We won't tolerate attacks on anyone because it's all fucked. And that's where I stand. And don't misinterpret this as an all lives matter rant. It's not. This is, we're all angry and we're all on edge. But we have to make sure that we're channeling that anger in the correct ways. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'll tell you what else needs to stop, or what people need to actually open their minds to understand, just in case they weren't yet, is that far too often, and to Tid's point, this is also something that's been going on for decades and decades and decades, yeah, is when you talk about representation, it disgusts me to no end the way in which killers are represented in both the news media and by representatives of, say, the police department. Because way too often, a white killer is often regarded as someone with a mental illness, or as Captain Jim Baker of the Atlanta Police Department described him, someone who was having a bad day and was at the end of his rope.
Listen, nobody can make apologies for that guy, because he was stupid, and that was a really insensitive and stupid
comment. It happens a lot, and that's the problem. Sure. Happens through representation of the photos of criminals when papers were a thing, in the way that they're described, right on down to the opposite happening. When the police are the perpetrators, i.e. in the Breonna Taylor case and so many others, even in the Ahmaud Arbery case, there always seems to be someone coming out saying the killers were in fact in the right. The killers were in fact did nothing wrong. And if you see something wrong with what they were doing, they just happened to be doing something out of the norm. As opposed to the continued rhetoric that makes it seem like people of a certain group are bad. And this is what happens when you have people in power, like the Trump administration, continue to say the same thing about groups of people, i.e. Mexicans, i.e. Muslims, i.e. the Chinese. And you have people reacting towards that, and it spurs this type of violence.
Go ahead, Tid.
I think that it, here's the thing. This isn't anything new. Right. This has been going on for decades. Right. If you go all the way back, listen, I was born in the 60s. So let's go back to the whole hippie thing. Let's go back to when women's rights came around. Let's go back to when civil rights were being a thing. Let's go back to when, if you smoked pot, you were getting beat down with a billy club. This has always been something that has been going on. And every single time, the only way that there is to make some kind of change to it is to bring light to it. So that's what we need to do constantly. And that's what I think we do best here right now. So let's keep this ball rolling. Let's keep everything going. Everybody knows, keep coming back. Come back next week. There's probably going to be some stuff to talk about. Go to Danny O's page. There's definitely going to be some stuff to talk about. You know what I mean? So this is exactly what we need to do, man. And I thank you guys for let's doing it, right?
Well stated. And my last point will be this. All of the hashtag stop Asian hate memes that are going around right now, I support it. I'm all about it. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily agree at this time today, as of Thursday, March 18th, I don't necessarily agree today that what happened in Georgia this week was a hate crime. based
this crime
on race. As of right now, crime, that is my belief. It could change.
This crime, exactly. This crime could very said, well.
There's nothing to make it seem like it's not the case.
However, yes, there is. Yes, there is.
However, hold on. Why? That's a different discussion. Neither right. here and, nor there.
And it's not but, the point.
But the point to all of this.
Tell
is,
the Asian guys, community that the point they don't to think all of, that's the point
the
at all.
Point, no, the point to all of this, even if you ask the Asian community, the point to all of this is that this has been going on for far too long and it needs to right. stop. That's the fucking point.
The point I was making is in a
period,
just like I agree with the hashtags of stop Asian hate right now, is the same reason that even though an innocent black man wasn't murdered today, I still say Black Lives Matter. It's not mm-hmm. because of what's happening in the news at this moment. Those sentiments should exist always. That's my point. Right. That doesn't take away anything from my personal beliefs based on the evidence that's been put forth so far, and it's limited, but based on the evidence that's been put forth so far, I don't believe today that what we witnessed was a hate crime. If more evidence comes forward and they show that it was, I'll come on here and say, fuck, I miscalculated that one. That all being said, it is heinous. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of everyone affected. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those that were not directly affected, but still feel as though they are being targeted as a result of this.
That is exactly how the Asian community feels.
And I got it. And I got it. But you know what? It's also how the sex worker community feels right
now. I'm sure that's true.
And when I heard today that just in case this was racially motivated, that police were going to increase security at Asian massage parlors in the Atlanta area, but not do anything at the non-Asian massage parlors, I'm like, that's fucked up. That's not right. Okay. So that all being said, I certainly believe that there needs to be a lot more attention paid to these kinds of issues. And we just have to make sure we look at it in the right light. And everyone's light is going to be different. The right light for you is a different light for me, but we're all trying to get to the same place. Tid, you want to jump on something else?
No, I'm good to go, man. I think we got a guest that's lined up pretty soon here. Do we not?
He's not here yet. We still have a few
typical
minutes.
Rock stars. They're always late.
We got a note that he's running a few minutes behind. So that's okay.
Stuck in hair and makeup.
So one thing I want to mention on a completely different note, Tid, you and I talked about this briefly off air.
Yeah.
And it's very, very topical in terms of COVID and everything else. The UFC announced they are going to be holding an event coming up very shortly with no restrictions on fan attendance. This will be the first event by any organization,
sure,
sporting event, concert, anything, to do so since the global state of emergency kicked into effect over a year ago. When is this event happening, Tid? Where is it? Is it in Florida?
It's in Florida. It's coming up very, very soon or whatever. So obviously, you know, here's one of the things that people have to, you know, a year ago they tried this. They were going to do this in California when this all took place, and they were going to try to do a show at Taji Palace, if I'm not mistaken, right? And it was something that everybody, including ESPN, shit all over them for. Rightfully so, because it wasn't like they were trying to circumvent state law to put on this show. Mm. Here's the thing you have to remember. They're not doing that this time around. Florida state law is saying, give her, go ahead, have fun. So the UFC is saying, listen, Dana White is saying, and our company is to keep our fighters and our staff safe. Your job as the city of Jacksonville is to keep your citizens safe. This is how he can turn this back on the city, right? If this whole thing turns out to be a shit show, which very well could happen, because quick little segue and side note to this is that the WWE very recently in the NXT brand just had a COVID breakout because somebody who got diagnosed went on their quarantine, maybe went to Disneyland, maybe didn't wear a mask, maybe came back to work and didn't wear a mask, and then they had a breakout. And that's why a lot of guys were missing from the show this past week, because they've had a breakout down there. And this is the state of Florida. Man. There's going to be bigger problems again, guys, because, you know, they're just jumping to get the gun out there. And I can't fault them for that. This has been going on too long, and they've been given the opportunity. But, hey, Florida, right?
It's crazy to think about. It's way premature in my mind for the UFC to say, yeah, sure, we're going to hold an event. We're going to fill it full of people.
I agree.
What happens, happens. Like, after the last UFC event, Dana White was talking in the press conference post-fight, and they were saying, hey, Texas says they're open for business. And he goes, I know the governor says they are, but all those damn stupid mayors, they don't want us. It's a shame. And it's like, what do you mean it's a shame? We're trying to get.
Yo, man, I heard from two people today, one a parent, one a teacher, in their respective schools where they teach. One teaches young children, the other has a young child. There has been a COVID breakout. They've now had to move back from being in school to being in virtual learning. And that's with them taking soap precautions, with wearing masks, with having a school population of approximately 20 to 25%. Florida wants to go ham, like everything is all good. Good luck, yo.
Gentlemen, it is time right now to welcome our guest. It is time for the big hello. And this week's guest, he hails from Rochester, New York. He grew up as a fan of 90s grunge rock, and he started playing guitar when he was just 11 years old. And he was likely teaching himself that killer riff from Smells Like Teen Spirit, right? F5, BB5 with the lights out. It's less dangerous. AB5, DD5. You know, like that's just guitar nerd talk, folks. His first band, Young Bloods, they found success and got a lot of love from Billboard. But this man, he continued to evolve and to find his sound. His musical journey continued with the birth of metalcore band Outlier. They've become a favorite on SiriusXM's Octane. I hear them on there all the time. And by heavy enthusiasts the world over. Side note, they have killer merch. And what the fuck's a rock band without a cool rock t-shirt? They're Smash Mouth. That's who. I highly recommend their song Buried Alive to get you the fuck out of bed in the morning. It works for me. Like a grunge and metal loving caterpillar, he continues to transform and is now something of an alt pop synthwave butterfly. He just released a solo project last week, a single covering Dreams by Van Halen. One music reviewer told me today it's the quintessential Van Halen tribute. Sam Hagar himself said this cover of Dreams could be my favorite anyone has ever done of any of my songs. I give it 5 stars and a must hear. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who actually posts more selfies than Justin Bieber, but rocks harder than him. It's Joey Arena.
Oh, that is a fucking introduction. I got nothing more to say, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, peace.
Have a good night, man. Good to see you, bro.
We'll go back to bullshitting about nothing. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing good. I got to think, for a kid that grows up in the hotbed, Rochester, New York, listening to 90s grunge music, and now you've got Sammy Hagar going, this guy rocked it, covering one of my songs. That's got to be a little surreal for you, right?
Oh, very surreal. In fact, every day I digest it a little bit more. I sometimes think, I forget that he's talking to me when he said that. So there's really no words just to say how amazing that was, honestly. When my publicist had sent me the video, I started cracking up out of excitement, and I missed everything that he said. I just saw his face doing the selfie video thing to me, and I just bursted out laughing. Like, wow. And I'm like, oh shit, I got to go back and listen to this. It was incredible, man. Honestly, it was definitely the greatest thing that's ever happened to me in music, for sure.
Did he send you any bottles of tequila?
No. I didn't want to ask for anything more. I felt he already did enough, but it did cross my mind.
Considering that you tributed them or paid homage to the record, was Van Halen a top inspiration for you coming up, or who else was on your list of like inspirations that got you into the whole music game?
So it's funny, Nirvana definitely is the reason why I started playing guitar. Right. But Eddie Van Halen was the reason I evolved at guitar for sure. Metallica, any just shred master guitarist, I idolized and looked up to. Guitar is actually my forte. Definitely, I mean, every kid, when they pick up guitar, it's like you want to learn sweeps and finger tapping and pretty much all the noises that Eddie would make and, like, you know, just capitalized on.
How old were you when you could finally master Evolution?
Oh, master? Never.
But it's always the goal, is it not? Like,
oh, for sure.
As soon as somebody learns how to do a couple of finger taps, you're like, okay, all right, now I can do this. It's like every drummer, as soon as you figure out how to do a couple of, like, off beats on the fucking ride and the snare, you're like, cool, I'm gonna play YYZ from, you know, Rush now.
There you go.
Like, you just can't do it, right? So like, it's got to be a process throughout the thing. You talk about Nirvana. Clearly, the band Outlier does not sound like Nirvana, right? Like, let's, you know what I mean? Yeah. What other influences, obviously, like, because you said to yourself, okay, this is the avenue we're going to go down. This is the group that we're going to go after, right? And so we need to have these influences. Who are your influences now? That you're, you know, with the music like that you're writing
on
now.
On the heavier side.
Yeah, on the heavier side of stuff.
So Nirvana's why Kurt is why I picked up guitar. I would say when I really started paying attention to songwriting, was honestly a couple of years after. It was like Korn. I just got a new metal wave. On Korn, Biscuit, Deftones. Static X, you know, Power Man 5000, Rammstein, obviously, Orgy, all that shit. So I grew up on that. I guess that's kind of when I started, like, getting into songwriting. I mean, I bought my first, like, real guitar was, like, an Ibanez, because that's what Monkey and Head played in Korn.
So, right.
Like, that's where. Yeah. So okay. I was in the studio when I wrote the first EP of Outlier, and we have a song on there called Broken Bones, and it was, like, out of all the writing and scrapping, that was the first song we decided to keep, but it does not sound like the rest of the record. It's more like a B, a little bit more of that, I guess it was called the metalcore side, more like Memphis Mayfire type of stuff, with a catchier chorus. But the rest of the record was, I'm sitting at the studio one night, and I'm just going through, like, old, like, Family Values Tour 98 stuff, and like Woodstock 99, and that, right? And I watched Korn play blind live.
Right.
And that, just the beginning, dude, when they start with that ride and, like, you know, the guitars just kind of, like, hint at it. And then all of a sudden Davis kicks in with that, "Are you ready?" And then they show the crowd and it's fucking I swear to God, man, that shit, that's heavy. That's heavy. And it was that moment. I mean, I've seen that video a million times, but something clicked at that time where I was like, this is the shit I fucking want. This is my roots right here. I want to play music that was, like, inspired by that new metal movement and, you know, obviously modernize it and make it my own wherever I can. But that's where I kind of dialed in. And then songs like Buried Me Alive, songs like Vice, and song, you know, like, all that was kind of like me taking that and moving it to my thing. But as I continue to evolve now, I got songs like Spineless, and we have a bunch of new ones coming out. It's like me now, like, honing in on my influence from, like, Slipknot and, like, my Corey Taylor barking
scream
that I do. So that's kind of where I just keep growing.
I was going to say, it sounds like
I have a problem. Hold on. But I have a problem because everybody does this. Everybody makes this mistake. And when I say heavy music and everybody says Slipknot, Slipknot's not a metal band. They're a ska band. Okay. Any band that has more than 12 members is a fucking ska band.
They're an orchestra.
All right.
If they need a school bus just for their drum section, they're a fucking ska band. Yeah, I'm down with that. You know what? When you mentioned Rammstein, I just got to throw this out there. One of my high school buddies, Iron Mike Ciampini, who for 20 plus years has been a really hot house music DJ up here in the Toronto area, and now he's down in the Bahamas doing his thing. when we were younger, and I used to listen to Rammstein on loop, he'd be like. he would do this little baby face and he'd go, Rammstein scares me. And I think of that every time I hear someone mention Rammstein. But when you talk about those heavy, heavy influences, the other imagery that pops in my head is the first time I saw Ministry live.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the most dangerous concert I've ever attended because nobody got out of that front area, that mosh pit area, unscathed. Nobody. Oh, yeah. It was violent. It was visceral. You felt the music in a way that you don't normally feel music. And I was just unprepared for that real overtaking of all of it. So it's really, really cool. I wanted to ask you, and then I know, Dan, you want to jump in, but growing up as a fan of 90s grunge, and I was too, huge, that era for music, that genre of music came from Seattle obscurity to mainstream commercial monster, and then it vanished.
Right.
And I often wonder, did it vanish because everyone tried to sound like Eddie Van Halen? And that just got old, or did it vanish because, like, it's really strange that you had, like, it's almost like disco, right? It was really hot and then it went away. Grunge kind of became the new disco. Why do you think it is that it just went away like that?
You know, it's funny because I have a thought. I'm not sure if it can answer that, but I think it's going to apply to what's happening right now mm-hmm. with all the shit you're hearing on Octane. There is a massive flood of metalcore bands moving into this active rock genre, which is what they're calling it now.
Right.
And dude, it grinds my fucking gears deep down inside.
Yeah.
And this is nothing against them. But the problem is, though, these bands are hopping on a trend that's not what they originally wanted to do. Like when I wrote my record in 2014, it was Korn, it was Biscuit, it was mm-hmm. Papa Roach, old Linkin mm-hmm. Park. That's the shit it was. Now, you know, I get bands evolve. I make the argument when everybody's like, oh, you know, this record sounds so different. Fuck that band. A band has to evolve. And, you know, true musicians mm-hmm. are going to write for themselves and not the fans. And if you share what the evolution of a band and you like them, I think that's the greatest form of success is a band or a fan that continues to roll with you.
Agreed.
Now, these metalcore bands, though, I mean, dude, that was such an overflooded market. And I get it. I played it a long time ago and this and that. That's why, like, people will say we're metalcore, but I fucking hate the association deep down inside. I understand that we may be this new wave of it, but I've toured with metalcore bands and we don't sign on anything like them. Like mm-hmm. we sing way too much to be considered metalcore, and we're more formula focused, you know, choruses that are not so high and whiny
and fucking melodies, right? Like
yeah, man. I mean, dude, you think of like metalcore, like I think of metalcore, I think of these guys that have this bipolar thing of being super fucking heavy in their breakdowns, and then they got the high whiny, high-pitched singer that has like long swoopy hair. And that's like you know, it's like I want to be tough for you, but I want to serenade you at the same time, girl. Like, but I'm mad though. I'm really mad. You know?
And it's but like, see, when I think about it, I think of like I go back and I think of like showcore. Like okay. a band like them, or I think of a band like Atreyu, right?
That's
when I think of like
that's good, metal
right? To me, man. Exactly. But I get what you're saying because there's this whole like I'm in your face and I'm angry and all of a sudden, please cuddle.
Yes.
Please cuddle.
Yes.
How about go fuck yourself? How about a whole lot of that?
I feel right? like we should write a stereotypical metalcore song tonight. I feel like. We
should do that. Oh God. So we're okay. I'm way far ahead, and I get so excited that I know that my pulse is going to be like, stop talking about the future shit with you. But we're currently working on a song that hits an old-school metalcore vein. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like Ezzelay Dying. Like, I'm talking like
yeah.
Godfather's old metalcore shit. That's mm-hmm. what I call metalcore. Mm-hmm. What it evolved into, you know, I got a lot of friends in it. I don't want to dog it, but it's not for me. Like, I personally just don't want to play that stuff. But I listen to old bands like, dude, again, Atreyu. Everybody wants to mock Atreyu right now, but dude, they're like, I love Atreyu still to this fucking what? Day, man. I love Atreyu.
Late 80s, dude. Like yeah. 88, 89, something like that. They've been rocking this thing. Like, come on. You got to give them respect, man.
And their sound was so unique, right?
That's the thing. And they opened the door to so many people. I mean,
yeah.
a lot of my friends are like, dude, Atreyu was the first heavy band that I got it, heavy band that I got into. Yeah. And then you listen to bands.
Oh, yep. I think we lost your audio.
Band chat blown.
There it is. Ironic. There you go.
Sorry about that.
It's all good.
I don't know, but anyway, so like, so we wrote a song that is so, we wanted to really show a lot of the genres that we like to fuck with and all the elements of rock and metal that we're about. So we have this riff that's heavy, like a corn riff, and then it goes right into like a thrash metal verse, like old Metallica, like, you know, Ride the Lightning shit, Battery style. And then it goes into like an As Lay Dying type of chorus. So like, and I wanted to kind of like create this, I guess people would call it like a subgenre hop of rock and metal. But I mean, okay. If you read the bio though, we say, I mean, we're just a rock metal band. I don't like the subgenre us. I mean, we have influences. You were asking about influences for Outlier, even a little bit of like Periphery. Honestly, I love prog metal.
Yeah.
But you know, we want to write a formulated version of prog metal. Like we want little tidbits of it. So I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. And I can't
say cool.
High and whiny. It's just not, I don't have that range, you know? So.
Right.
I know Jan wants to jump in, but before I do that, I just want to say, because you mentioned Metallica and we were talking about, you know, how people shit on Atreyu and all that, right? And it's like, I love when I hear these, you know, gatekeepers of metal that go, fuck Metallica, they're shit. And it's like, you show me another band that sold 2 million copies without a single second of radio play and I'll bow down to them, right? Like
Fugazi. Like,
2 million
out of the trunk, out of the trunks of you. Their cars.
2 million copies without a second of radio play when they first hit. Like that's ridiculous. In an era when internet wasn't a thing, right? Like you sold records based on radio play, and they didn't have any. And that was a true underground swell. And it's like, yeah, they've changed, they've evolved. But like Joey was saying, like bands evolve, man. Like that's just what happens. Dan, go ahead, jump in.
Well, I had a songwriting question, bro, because, you know, I'm a songwriter too. And I love lyrical stuff and meaning and messages behind the music. So I want to take you back to the first Outlier album, because I was really intrigued by the Set the World in Flames video and single. Especially because it starts with this incredible quote that I want to give the group. The worst thing is watching someone drown and not being able to convince them that they can save themselves by just standing up. And then, of course, the song and video gets into these images of drug abuse and things of that nature. You say things like taking shots, I'll take my pride, break the skin, cut the tie. So I love the metaphor and I love the message. So I was curious about that song in particular as far as your songwriting process was concerned and the messages you were trying to send in that, because I felt it was so powerful and something I could relate to.
I'm happy you asked this question. So when I write lyrics, I write in a like 3+ dimensional state. Like I want the viewer, the listener to take their own message from it. So honestly, how I wrote the song is not how the video.
Right. That often happens.
But the video now is real stories from people not only in my family, but also people that were in the band at the time too.
Wow.
So 2 out of 4 members of Outlier were heroin addicts of the first lineup.
Wow.
So these are real stories. It was not and I told the videographer when we were talking about it, I said, I do not want a Hollywood glorified PG-13 version of this. I want Between the Toes. I want to show that the deals that have gone sour in the process for some of these people. I want to show how it can literally not only ruin your life, but others around you as well, if you're pressuring them into certain things. But and I'm glad that we did that video, because it was a hard hitting, gruesome thing for a lot of people to watch. And when ABC News approached us about picking that up, it was a great thing, because I didn't give a fuck, honestly, about the music at that point. It was really that the message was
I thought
was better. And that's when we were going through the epidemic pandemic at the time.
Yeah.
That, you know, that we ironically don't hear much about now, but that was the shit. And like, so it just kind of caught something, and we did not even mean to be I mean, that's another thing. I sometimes don't like when artists are like capitalizing on a fucking pandemic at a time. Like, right. It's such a, it's like, I don't know, man. I just, whatever.
But I feel you, because earlier you were talking about that you want to write it for yourself and not the audience.
Yes.
And after doing that, the audience will really take to it and ride with you because it's so real to you. It's realer to the audience. Like, I respect music. Like, it's the type of music I like to make and listen to. And I was just sort of curious, that quote off the top, was that something that you wrote as well? And what inspired you to start it that way? Because I thought that was such a powerful way to set, you know, the table for what you're about to watch.
I have to give full credit to my videographer, Jesse Conti, on that.
Okay.
One. I'm not going to lie. I did not make that up. Him and
it's
I,
awesome, though.
We work so close, and I eventually want to shoot movies. I want to do screenwriting. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The way Rob Zombie lives is pretty dope to me. And, so I want to eventually get into that. So all the moves, the music videos that we do, that's why they're pretty extravagant. They're not just us playing in woods, us playing in building. Like, it's, I want a short film. I want to know, I want the characters. I mean, you got 3 minutes and 30 seconds to really fucking get into your story. And that's just not enough sometimes. So you want to create a little bit of a beginning, a little bit of an end, and you want that holy shit moment. And you know, like that twist almost. It's like, if I could make every music video be like Fight Club, I would totally do that. So,
right.
And sure enough, actually, we have a music video coming out that's inspired by Fight Club. So
that's dope. That's up my alley. I love that, man.
But that record, though, was all about overcoming. Overall, it was overcoming. Those were real real stories because from my previous band that was mentioned earlier, Youngbloods, that song, I mean, The Bridges That I Burn Will Light the Way. Dude, honestly, I never go in with wanting to no longer speak to somebody again. But sometimes people, they fucking hand you the scissors to cut that tie, man. They give you that match to burn that fucking bridge. And then those narcissists play that whole woe is me shit and play that fucking victim. It's like, dude, you're a shitty person towards me. Like, of course I'm going to cut you the fuck off.
Yeah, man.
So it's trusting that not everybody's meant to be in your life for the rest of your life. And that's what that song's really about. So
big.
Joey, last week on this show, we had a guest, Lawrence Gowan. Obviously, he was a huge prog rock independent artist in Canada through the 80s. And then, of course, now the lead singer of Styx, one of the biggest prog rock bands of all time. Domi Arigato, Mr. Abato, right? But he made a comment last week when Dan was asking him about music and musical styles, Dan being, you know, one of the most celebrated hip hop artists in Canadian hip hop history. And I thought Gowan made a really interesting point when he talked about hip hop is all about lyrics and rhythm, whereas rock is about melodies. And I'm wondering if you look at metal, if you see, I mean, It's too cliche to talk about rap metal, but if you look at metal, do you see a marriage there to a certain degree of those?
I think when songwriting is the focus of metal, I do see some of that, yes, because you got guys that just play metal that highlight their talents of just being shred masters on the guitar or just complete annihilating the drum kits, and like it becomes a showmanship. I mean, you got bands like Between the Buried and Me that are all fucking talented guys. And it's like, every time you listen to a song, it's like, when I hear bands like that, it's like each one of them is like, okay, it's my turn now. And it's my turn now, like as a musician. And that's how they show that they're really talented. But then you got metal bands that focus on songwriting, I think more. And when I say songwriting, I mean more of the radio structure of, you know, intro, bridge, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus type of thing. And those guys are focused on definitely melody. And I think the lyrical content, I try not to relate. There's really been very few artists that have impressed me lyrically, and that's not in a pompous way, but what it is like, I don't judge on them because I think they're just writing for themselves and that's their own story to get out. And there's just very few people that have done that. There's one vocalist that has ever truly like, man, this guy fucking spoke to me. And it was a band, like a pop punk, pop rock band called Conditions. And the singer was in a metalcore band called Scarlet back in the early 2000s. I don't know if you guys remember them at all. So he went in this rock genre, but his lyrics are unbelievable, talking about how working a 9-to-5 is just not the life for him and that he wants to be on the road. And like, all these things in that, just also like what goes on in his head, like when he gets on stage, how will you make them remember your name? Like, how are you going to impact the world? How are you going to make people remember you? Yeah. Are you just going to get up and put on one hell of a show, or are you going to inspire people on a deeper, more emotional and intellectual level? So, yeah, kind of like, I know I'm like, take like a detour to your answer.
But no, that's it. Listen, we're just fucking spitballing and making shit up as we go, but it does bring up a thought. And I know Chris wants to jump in, but it brings up a thought to me, and you don't need to comment on this, but there's that lyrical stereotype trope for outsiders looking at different genres, right? So people that don't know anything about metal, to them, every lyric is death, 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 death. And for people that don't know anything about hip hop, it's bitches and hoes, bitches and hoes. And for people that don't know anything about country music, it's my dog died, my girl left me, and now I'm going to fucking put a gun in my mouth, right? Yeah. Like, there's all these stereotypical tropes. But when you actually take the time to get into the shit and listen, you realize that, yeah, some of the stuff is like that. But there's stuff that's so much better as well. Tid, go ahead.
I mean, in all fairness, the put a gun in my mouth was also very grunge.
But too soon. Too soon. Hey, man, but nice shot.
That was different. That was on live TV, and that was a guy that would say, hey, man, nice socks.
No, don't you know how it goes? I got thick fucking skin, man. That's one of those moments where I have no comments, so I don't see myself out.
We were talking earlier about like the crossovers and whatnot, and there really is been a lot more of a crossover between like hip-hop and metal and collaborations. Sure. You go back to the old-school ones, and now it seems to be, you know, with bands like Linkin Park, for example, that really made it, you know, prominent in their stuff. Beastie Boys, a prime example of the way that they were able to write lyrically and whatnot. And then you see collaborations that involved Slayer and you know, Biohazard and the whole Judgment Night soundtrack and everything like that. Like
Anthrax.
Do you find yourself listening to hip hop as well? And if so, like who are you bumping right now?
Definitely dated with my hip hop. I listen to hip hop all the time. I listen to DMX. I mean, Pac is a poet, man. And Nas is like either my first or my second. They between the two. But that Nas I Am record, man, it's fucking beginning to end. It's a perfect record in my
life. Am really.
And when you get into like old school shit, the message it teetered sometimes with bitches and hoes, but it was really a lot about the struggle. And, you know, where you come from. And, like, you know, Nas painted a picture when he talked. Pac, I knew where Pac was when he talked. You know what I'm saying? And then there was times where he did kind of go, you know, aha, I fucked your bitch. Like, I mean, there's more to it, though. And, like, I don't know, man. So, like, I listen to that. I listen to all that old shit. And I love some Ludacris. I'm not going to lie. I get into some Mobb Deep. Some Mace. Honestly, even when Mace used to...
Wow.
Okay.
You know,
who would you choose to collab with? I'm just thinking Outlier, Outkast kind of has a nice ring to it, but what do you think?
1000 is the shit, man. I would totally be about that.
It would look good on the marquee too, man.
What's up?
Outlier and Outkast would look good on the marquee too.
Dude, that'd be so cool.
Sounds like a dope idea, man.
Outkast would have to change the spelling of their name though.
Just put that
right. Yeah. Put the V in there.
Is that strictly for Google's sake? That V in Outlier?
Smart. Actually, yeah, so it is a branding thing. But if you go back in the old alphabet, like Greek alphabet, Roman alphabet,
there
was no U. So
that's right.
Acted as the vowel U. But yeah.
Hold on. Are you actually Greek? Is it Joey Arenaopoulos?
Yeah. I own diners. I mean, I'm not going to lie, man. I do love me a gyro and a feta,
nice.
A feta omelet and shit.
I mean, hey, man, I want to ask you about another aspect that I love the most. Songwriting is definitely a passion. I imagine performing, you're talking about doing live shows. And obviously, I would think for any real performer, that's where they really love to be. Sadly, COVID has put a major stop to that. But I have a question that was inspired by a couple of jokes these two were giving me on the show over the past couple of weeks. And that is, have you ever been on stage performing a show and for some reason or another, you experienced a mishap? Did you forget your lyrics? Did you slip and fall in the mosh pit? Have you ever had an embarrassing moment that you can recall?
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear about it.
Caught eyes with a really hot girl and forgot what the fuck you were doing.
Yeah.
You know what? Not the hot eyes. So when I stare out in a crowd, I could be looking right at you, and I'm not going to lie. There's nothing ticking up here. Like, right. I'm kind of looking right. through you.
Right.
So, there'll be people that, like, I wave to you. I'm like, I stare right through your soul, and then it's the person behind you. So,
right.
Forgotten lyrics. I'm pretty sure I've done that once or twice. It would be like a, like, I would mix like a verse or something like that, probably.
Switch it up.
Yeah. I mean, nothing too crazy. I don't think I've fallen. I've definitely gotten the mic tangled around my feet.
That's a classic one.
Oh, classic, man.
Yeah.
You gotta go wireless.
Wireless. That's why. That's a secret that every artist doesn't like to admit. Why do they like wireless mics? Because I don't want to trip, motherfucker. This has happened to me.
Man. Well, then why not just go? Why not just go like Britney Spears, headset,
Madonna?
You get a like Will Ferrell. I wouldn't know what to do with my hands.
Right. You'd have to start dancing. That's really what it boils down to.
You need a routine,
right?
This isn't metal.
You'd have to break out those old school Janko jeans.
There you
right?
go. Right. Skunks. I had the skunks.
That's awesome. So you've got the track that's out right now, Dreams, which dropped last week. The cover of the Van Halen tune. We talked about it in the open. Other than the fact that you grew up a fan, what motivated you now to do this? Because Outlier has released a few singles in 2020. You got another one coming out next month, I believe. Yep. What's the thinking? What's the logic about a Joey Arena solo project now, where you're going to release a cover song to a band that you loved when you were a kid?
You know, I think I got to kind of give thanks to COVID for some of that, because it gave me time. Like, I've been wanting to do this for 3 years, and I've been telling my producer, like, this is what I want to do, and one day I'm going to fucking do it. But Outlier was so busy.
Right.
And I never had a moment to really sit, digest, and kind of figure out how to start something again. And, you know, something I'm, like, passionate about. But although, like, musically, I grew up on, like, starting the grunge era. I mean, I was also born in 86. So, I mean, I had 4 years to enjoy the 80s. And, like, you got grunge. I mean, honestly, it was really Guns N' Roses, Nirvana.
Sorry, Tid shaking his head because he was born in the 60s.
Hey, you know what? You got to enjoy the 80s. I wish I was in my teens enjoying the 80s.
I did. 100%. I graduated school in 88, bro. So
you were high.
Yeah, I grew up on all. I remember when grunge started, and I was like, "What is this?" Because I was already into, like, you know, I'm originally from Las Vegas, so I grew up on, like, West Coast punk.
Yep,
you know what I mean, like old school skate punk West Coast early 80s greatness. Right?
Three chords is all you need, man.
Yo, is this true?
Three strings is all you need.
Is this true across music genres that the 80s and 90s just seem to be the heyday of the genre? Because I know in the hip hop world, many people feel that. And for someone who just said that you kind of miss the 80s, do you have an attachment to that sound in that era and feel that it was when music was at its best, or has it grown and developed? Because there's a lot of arguments in every genre of music, but I find that no matter the genre, people often go back to that time period and say that's when the best music was being made. Is that true in your opinion?
Well, I think to be a musician during those times when you could not have Melodyne auto-tuner, go recordings, and it was all
true.
Absolutely. You had to know your shit. You had to be good, you know? And now you have a million and one studio projects that portray to be good musicians. But, I mean, dude, you never know nowadays what it is. Everything's so fab. You know what I'm saying? Like,
a
vocalist, I've had to fucking grow and work at it. Like, I was not a natural gifted vocalist. As guitar, I mean, I feel confident as a guitarist. I could show up and do that shit all day long, no matter what it was. But vocals, like, and we really dissect everything. I mean, Outlier, I have so many different characters that I like to incorporate. And then singing Arena is like a whole different style. Like, I'm doing vocal runs, and I'm singing softer and smoother and a little bit of, like, it's a whole different thing. But the thing, like, what I love about the two different polar opposite, you know, experiences for me is that I'm growing.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, excited to see how they're going to kind of, like, cross-pollinate now and, like, what they can do for me as, you know, as an overall vocalist. But getting back to what you're saying about the 80s and 90s, you know, you look at all the 80s bands, even some that were not so, you know, mainstream, I guess, but all the guitar players can fucking play. All the fucking drummers held it down and just was in the pocket. Some of them were a little flashier than others, but they were just solid backbones. And then you look at all the singers, man. You know, they fucking ruled. They were all great. They had this range of whatever, you know. And you look at the 90s. What I love about the 90s, I think, so much for music, not just hip-hop, but the radio and artists were not afraid to experiment. That, yeah. The 90s overall, and I'm talking like, you know, I'll say even 89, 88, all the way to fucking 2000, early 2000s. There was this, dude, when you think of the artists that came out, that's when subgenres were just blossoming all over the place. Yeah. And it was because there was so much experimentation. And now you listen to pop radio and it's safe as shit.
Right.
And I don't mean lyrically it's safe. I'm talking like you can hear these ghostwriters pumping out the same song with just a different vocalist on it. And with,
you know,
I can be your boyfriend and leave that guy for me and I can do this and wet ass pussy.
Don't sleep on wet ass pussy, man. Don't that shit bangs. That bangs.
Sleep in wet ass pussy.
That's right.
I was gonna throw this out there, and only this is not a question. I was gonna throw this out there to you as a kid that grew up as a Nirvana fan. Just a quick anecdote. I've shared this story with Tid many moons ago. When I was a high school kid, I had a buddy who was so into everything before anyone else knew about it. Yeah. And I remember he gave me a cassette tape of Nirvana, like an unreleased track. And he's like, check this shit. And I was like, whoa, this is special. This is something, right? And then he blew my mind. He's like, yeah, it's a three-piece band. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. That sound is so big. And I remember him telling me there's a venue here in Toronto called the Opera House. And I know the other fellas here have been there. It's not a big place. How many would you say the Opera House holds at full capacity, fellas? 500?
Maybe 500.
I mean, if legally, Tid.
Oh.
Maybe 1,000, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, with the 49, balcony.
63.
I got 82. I got the heads up. They were coming to perform at the Opera House. I'm like, fuck, let's go downtown and pick up some tickets. So we did. 2 weeks later, Smells Like Teen Spirit dropped on the radio. And now they're the fucking hottest thing on the planet. And I remember going to the Opera House to see the show, and we've got our tickets, and there's a lineup down the street of thousands and thousands and thousands of people that know they're not getting in the venue.
Wow.
They just want to see these scraggly motherfuckers from Seattle just get a glimpse of. This is before the video dropped.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, wow. Talk about like, and I mean, everyone jokes, right? They were like an overnight success that took years and years and years to develop. But really interesting to see when you go from underground to over the top, you know, right up against each other like that, right?
Yep.
And I have a friend of mine who's a huge fan of your music. He listens to Octane 24/7, and he's like, he actually said to me today, I was like, yeah, I'm interviewing your arena. He goes, ah, fuck Outlier, they're too big now. What?
Wow.
I love
stiff
that.
Shots fired.
I would love to get that.
Yeah.
That's an amazing disc.
You know what's funny is I was kind of warned of that by one of my friends. I won't mention his name, who's played on Octane all the time. And he said, he goes, wait till you get on Octane. That's when people are going to say, fuck you. And I'm like, so this is my first non-direct moment of that. And I'm like, that son of a bitch was right. Shit.
Yeah.
but I mean, same thing happened for Every Time I Die on Liquid Metal as well, another New York Buffalo band as well. So it seems like New York is putting out some fucking fire right now. You know what I mean? So congratulations to that. How cool has Sirius XM been to you guys?
Oh man, that's like it's like you're doing this. your career. And as soon as you hit octane, it's like that.
Bam.
It just right off, man. It's like strapping rockets to your ass, and that's it. The problem is, though, is fucking COVID, man, because we were like,
oh, for sure.
We were peaking like the fuck out hard, and then we announced our Motionless tour. We had the Alisana 10-year anniversary tour, which
was man. Dope.
We had festivals lined up. Like, we were set to really capitalize. And I mean, rock and metal, you need to tour. And that's when you really start seeing the positive sides of radio, you know, Sirius XM or major FM radio. And our single Buried Me Alive at the time was not only doing well on Oxygen, but it was doing very well all over the States on major FM. So I'm like, holy shit, is this that moment? Is that that time? And then we announced all these tours. I'm like, this is that fucking time. And then
man.
Like, this is not that time.
Damn, a guy that's on Sirius every day, but live a few times a week. The guy that's, you know, keeping Sirius in business, Howard Stern, he often makes the comment as a lifelong, you know, rock fan. He often makes the comment, rock is dead. Rock is dead. There's no new rock that's any good. Rock is dead. But when I look at Outlier and see over 2 million views on your shit on YouTube, and I see 60,000 people that are following your stuff, rock's not dead, man. Rock's going through a metamorphosis right now.
There you go.
And it's changing, and it's altering and
evolving.
You know, it's evolving. And you talked a few times in this interview tonight, Joey, about all the different subgenres of music. But to me, at the end of the day, it's fucking rock.
Yeah.
It's just fucking rock. And it's all just merging and melding, and it's coming out on the other side with this really fucking robust sound.
Sure. Well, like you were saying, so going back to the Metallica thing and how you got these people that are like, fuck Metallica.
Right.
You know what? Whether it's them or Bring Me the Horizon, people are talking shit about, because Bring Me the Horizon was like a deathcore, you know, deathcore band. And now they're in this. You know what? To me, whatever fucking brings rock back into mainstream, I'm fucking behind it, because I'm so tired. That purest, elitist bullshit thought process that a lot of rock and metal musicians have is what holds this genre back.
Yep.
Get the fuck out of the way.
Happens in hip-hop.
These bands are working as hard as they are and fucking bringing it somewhere. When Slipknot kicked out fucking Taylor Swift out of number one, hell yeah, I was fucking there for that shit.
Right.
Like, that's what I want. I want to see all these bands succeed. I want this shit to come back to the forefront, because in my opinion, rock and metal has more heart, more personality, a lot more to it than today's pop, today's rap. And that's coming from a guy, like, I'm comfortable to say I miss, like, old pop, how it used to be now. I was a pop fan, but I'm missing NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. I wasn't a fan of them.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan, but those motherfuckers could sing. They could fucking dance. Like, you had to be good.
Arena's back. All right. Dan, you got the last word.
Quick question from the hip hop guy. Is having Stay Hungry by Twisted Sister a cool or bad look for a record collection? Come on, man. We not gonna take it. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Is that sitting right there in your record collection?
That's the one right there. I put that up for Joey.
Oh, dude, I love that shit.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure that my collection's legit. That's all.
He won it on a radio contest.
No, sir. I've had this record a long time. Ted, you can burn it hell.
I will. That's from before Dan hated white people. I'm just playing. Listen, Joey, thank you so much, man, for your time. If fans want to get in touch with you, man, what are your socials?
My personals, just I made everything Joey
Arena. Yeah, what's your phone number?
911. Call the Rochester police to get a hold of me, please.
People want to DM you singing their favorite Backstreet Boys song. They should find you on Instagram.
That would be amazing. In fact, if somebody does that, I'll send you free merch.
Hey, nice. And they've got good merch. We're going to go out tonight playing the YouTube upload that you guys have for Dreams. We're going to go out on that tonight. And we want everyone to check out that track. You can also go to YouTube and check it out. Spotify.
Yep. Apple Music, all Pandora, all of that.
All the places where you find this show, you're going to find all Joey's shit too. Man, listen, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it and hope you had fun.
Dude, I had a blast. You guys honestly have been a great interview. I love this. This was awesome. I hope to do it again. Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll definitely be in touch. Thanks Arena.
Thanks, yes, guys. Sir. Have a great night.
All right, too, there he goes, man. That's Joey Arena. Gentlemen, any last thoughts before we play the track and say goodnight?
You can burn in hell. Burn in hell.
That is.
Who's that directed to?
Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Wow. Because
you know
white.
That? Do you know that it's there's a dedication to Arnold Schwarzenegger or something in the album. Trust me, I read liner notes and everything, bro. Sure. I grew up.
And this was actually,
believe it or not, this is one of my records for real growing up. And I read the lyrics and looked at the half-eaten meat on the back cover. It, like, trust me, sure. I was into this shit.
Did you ever watch Strangeland, the movie with Dee Snider?
Mm.
Like
no.
That he did, and it was like this you know, grade A horrible genre movie, but
B movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say B, but
F movie.
You got to see Dee Snider. Dee Snider's in really good shape, so it is absolutely no surprise to me.
Oh, okay.
That he, you know what I mean, and a very, very, very smart guy. You remember when all of that, like PMRC and Tipper Gore,
yes,
and putting the labels on, and the two guys from the rock world that showed up to represent was Frank Zappa and Dee Snider, and they made them look silly.
Yeah,
he along with the Two Life Crew.
Yeah, man, yes. Luke.
And I love that he just showed up looking rocked out. Didn't put on no shirt and tie. You know what I'm saying? Nope. And dude was on Apprentice, so I know he had some chops.
Who hosted that show?
Yeah, Ben's our favorite. I've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure. They perform "Burn in Hell" in that song, in that movie. Trust me, I know my twisted sister.
Every now and then,
I thought Pee-wee went to jail for showing his Big Adventure.
That was before. That was after, actually.
Every now and then on this show, we wrap up by asking, what did you learn this week? I'm pretty sure that Dan learned the term metalcore, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct.
I can tell by the look on your face every time metalcore was said. You're like, 100%.
Yeah.
That's just some rock shit. I don't know.
Like, it wasn't core enough? Just metal? That's a hard
rap. Not real core.
There's rap core. Yeah. Don't even kid yourself.
Remember horrorcore? Speaking of genres that came and went.
Oh, that's just Voodoo Drew and Social Club.
Okay, well, there was a few.
There's a few. I think GWAR kind of owned the market on that, right, Tid? Like eating GWAR. Small animals on stage and Ozzy and
Green Jelly. There was a whole bunch Cannibal of them corpse. Out there, man. 100%.
Yeah.
What the hell?
A lot of fun this week, and Dan's camera fucks up. There's the Daniel curse in full effect. Whoa. Guys, we are out of here. This is episode 47 in the books. Next week is the official 1-year anniversary of this program.
Wow.
Get at us. Holy. Message us, godfatherspodcasting@gmail.com. DM us on our socials. We want to hear your favorite interviews, your favorite moments of this past year on the Godfathers of Podcasting. Send them in. And you know what? If they're good, we'll shout them out on the program next week.
We had 5 weeks off last year.
Apparently.
Christmas break, I think.
We took a couple off at Christmas.
Slacking.
We took a couple off because we said, fuck it.
Slacking.
Guys, here we go. We're going out on Joey Arena. This is Dreams. His new single that was released just last week. You can check it out on Spotify. Check it out on YouTube. Thanks so much. On behalf of Chris Tidwell, the Notorious T.I.D., and your bro Danny O, my name is Donnie Da Silva. We'll see you next week.
save all the tears you've cried. Oh, that's what dreams are made of. 'Cause we belong in a world that must be strong.
Love and love walks in.